Well, our next guests today are repeat visitors to Express Yourself, Logan Phillips and Merlin Hepworth. First hit KDNK when slam poetry was a pretty new thing on the air here, and they simply electrified this place with their razor rhymes and their street cred, too. They've returned to the Valley many times since to teach workshops in the schools and perform on stage in venues up and down the Valley, and here they are again this week and next. Please welcome Merlin Hepworth. Welcome back, Merlin.
Hey, what's up?
Good to see you again. Yeah, Logan Phillips is here too. Hey, Logan.
Hello, hello. How's everybody doing?
Good to see you again. And also joining us is Ellie Scott. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Your organization, Aspen Words, is responsible for bringing these two fine gentlemen and poets to the Valley, and you've got them busy, don't you?
We do. Over the 2 weeks that they are working in the Valley, we have them visiting 16 different schools through the Roaring Fork Valley. And we also have two additional poets as well. So we've got four poets working 16 schools on, 10 different days between this week and next.
That's amazing. Now, most of these schools, I imagine you guys have been there before. Are you seeing the same poets coming up and growing?
Yeah, we are. I think that's one of the things this program is really interesting for a lot of reasons. And I think it has a lot of reasons that it's met with so much success. And one of the things that makes it so rare is the fact that it's so long running. I don't know of any program that's of this scale that has been kind of continuing on this many years in a row. And so with that now, you have young people, freshmen, in high school who are at seniors in high school, for that matter, who have never not had spoken word as a cultural presence in their kind of youth culture. And that's incredibly powerful. It's normalizing the idea of self-expression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Huh. And are there, have you noticed some of the same attendees and the way, have they grown in the art a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, today there was a young man named Aiden who I saw last year and worked with. And he read his poem, and it was like, wow, this guy has grown up, a little bit more. So, yeah, you see, but there's always so many new young people to it.
Uh-huh.
That's actually kind of the more rare case where, people get really, really involved, and they slam every year. That happens. But, and go to the main, the Third Street Center and participate in our big culminating event. But there's just so many young people that are just there in the classroom for the first time, getting something on paper and, saying something significant and truthful about their experience. I was at Basalt High School today and we had poems about, parents who were diagnosed with cancer and, relationships with a brother that moved away to college and, just all these real things that are happening and present in the lives of these young people come to the surface in these workshops. And one of the most beautiful things about it is that it humanizes each young person to the other and to the staff. When a girl gets up and reads her poem about struggling with, self-image and body image and all these things, her experience becomes palatable to the room, and she's no longer this girl. She's more full, and that's a really valuable part of this type of programming.
That's a powerful thing when kids realize they're not alone.
Yes.
That's absolutely a really powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the thing I was always impressed with in your previous visits here was the sense of empowerment that you create for those kids, and that's a beautiful thing. And, one thing I wonder, you've been here, how many times have you guys been here now? Year six.
Yeah.
Are you doing it like this all over the country? Are there other places you've been six times? Is there sort of a circuit?
There is a circuit, definitely. And there are other organizations and schools that bring us in. But like I said at the top, this really is unique because there's nothing. I don't know if I've been anywhere, maybe an individual school for 6 years in a row,
yeah.
But not in a kind of all-encompassing project like this.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the events before we get to your own personal work. Coming up, there is actually a night of performance you guys and the other two poets involved. That's, what is that, Tuesday?
That's Tuesday the 13th.
Okay.
At Hooch in Aspen.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Right there on Hopkins. Yeah. Restaurant Row there.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that'll be a really fun event because that gives the poets a chance to sort of showcase their own work. Right now, you know, mm-hmm. they're spending so much of their energy workshopping with different students and really bringing them along. But this sort of gives the, you know, a different crowd an opportunity to see them in their uncensored work, which should be really incredible.
Yeah, I'll bet. And then, as you said earlier, workshops in the schools. And then there's the Youth Poetry Slam a week from today over at the Third Street Center.
Yeah, correct. 6:30 to 8:30.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I remember the first year you guys came, and I was asked to be one of the judges.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was kind of moping and dragging my feet. I don't want to do this. And I got there, and my eyes just went,
yeah.
You know, all those kids just opening themselves was just mind-blowingly great.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty special event. I mean, if you've never experienced it, you will go there and you will leave changed, because at least one of those poets is just going to remind you of parts of your own story. And it is empowering. It's impactful. And this community just does such an amazing job of supporting these young people. Like, they're so excited for them. So it's like when these kids get off the stage and these like adults and other kids are just like, you really did something impactful, you know, like it just gives them a whole renewed sense of self and a confidence that, you know, it's hard to attain in any other venue. You know, like they're all terrified before they get on stage, mm-hmm. but they leave knowing that there's a larger, they're more possible than they knew themselves to be. You know, their potential is large, and the way you grow is by stepping out of your comfort zone. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's a great thing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you guys and what's new with you and your work. Logan, let's start with you. Do you have a new book? What's going on with your
not a new book. I'm you know, involved in a lot of things in Tucson, and one of the things I'm involved with heavily is DJing and doing cultural work around border issues and around using arts and culture as a way to kind of engage community in conversation, similar to the way that we do it through poetry, but that can also be done kind of on the dance floor, you know, in a kind of party format. And so we have a festival coming up in April called El Tambo Fest, where we're going to bring a bunch of artists from the borderlands together for the first time to perform. And then I'm looking towards making some changes in the fall and starting work. I have a new manuscript that I'm also working on at the same time. So my life right now is a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And that can be frustrating at times because there's more to do on every project. But it's also very rewarding because I don't get stuck doing one thing.
Still based in Arizona?
Yep, Tucson, Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Tucson. Oh, I thought it was Phoenix.
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Definitely not.
Yeah, I know that about Tucson versus Phoenix. Well, Tucson's a great town. Yeah. Culturally, musically, everything about it is great.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's, you know, it's undergoing kind of a renaissance right now, too, where it's kind of seeming to come aware of itself, which is a really interesting time because there's a lot of possibility and there's also a real necessity for place keeping, the idea of carrying forward the story of who we are and who we have been as a city, so that the kind of new energy and kind of newness doesn't wash away, you know, what makes Tucson what it is in the first place.
And Merlin?
Yeah, well, actually, I just launched a Kickstarter to... I have my first ever studio album coming out in March. And I produced almost all the instrumentals. All but two or one. It's a 15-track record. And it's called Remember Why. It's about love and relationships, being an artist on the road, and really... struggling with how you make sense of home and belonging. And so, yeah, it's I'm really, really excited about it. So, yeah, that's pretty much been consuming the majority of this year. I started writing some of the songs actually up the hill, like where we're staying now, up above Glenwood. So it's cool. It's full circle. So I'm really excited about it. We're trying to raise some funds so that we can, you know, distribute it properly and make music videos and, you know, roll it out.
Cool.
In detail, yes.
And how do people find that? Is that on GoFundMe or what's it
on? It's
on
Kickstarter.
Kickstarter.
And the project's called Remember Why, and just search Merlin Kickstarter. You'll find it. My name's spelled MYRLIN. Uh-huh. So, yeah, MYRLIN.
And are you singing on this or are you rapping?
It's, yeah, there's some poetry on it. There's definitely rapping. There's plenty of singing. And it's like it's authentic and it's original. Like there's a place for a lot of people in there to step in and enjoy it of various backgrounds and ages. And so it's cool because one of the best advantages I really had as a producer is that I didn't grow up classically trained as any type of musician. So when I was teaching myself, like I didn't have the privilege of like worrying about, you know, how things are supposed to be rigidly played a certain way in a certain scale. I just knew what sounded bad and how to avoid that until you just work and you're like, oh, this sounds great. Uh-huh. You know, so it's just like this kind of raw approach to it. And it's just been really, really, really great, really fun. So the true story is that this project that we did here is what funded me to get the equipment to become nice. Viable as a music producer. So
nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
That is great.
That is really great.
Yeah.
Well, Logan, would you read or recite something for us, please?
Yeah, sure. I have a new piece, and it's about one of the things I do, which is I work in an alternative school in Tucson. That's a really great school. But the students there are dealing with a lot all the time, a lot of systemic violence against them and their families. And so that manifests itself in the classroom. So this is a little bit of an intense piece, but this is kind of my day-to-day, the work in Tucson, and it's called Rage or On the Sharing of Air. Sobbing. I can only hear his throat and not his words, what he's trying to say to me over the phone while I stand in the principal office. There's a gun in the house, somebody says. He left school, a tornado in a coal mine, rage bigger than his big body. A teacher tried to talk him down from the front step of the city bus. The look in the bus driver's eyes. The last time I tried to leave, he put a gun to his head, she says. She is scattered and scared, powerful and doubtful, nowhere to go in the entire world if not back to his house. Call the state, the city says. Please hold, the state says. I lived 2 years in a shelter, no way I'm going back, she says. He hangs up on me again. I can go over to his house right now, I say, and the principal looks over her glasses into my eyes. I don't want you over there, she says. Should I call 911? There are some questions not mine to answer. He calls me back. I just need to talk to her. Please, okay, I tell him. Okay, I tell him. His breath in one ear as the principal speaks with the dispatcher in the other ear. Black male. Tread locks. 5'9", 18 years old, left school, agitated state 30 minutes ago. We believe there may be a handgun in the house. Cry from his chest. What the word anguish tries to say, he hangs up again before I find the words for cops are on the way. And I've read this narrative before. Watch the aftermath and the think pieces, and I wonder if I'm the one now turning my student's name into a hashtag, if I'm the one with the tongue tomorrow somersaulting the police were supposed to help. I'm going over there, assistant principal says. The cops are on the way, I'm suddenly able to say. Our eyes connect only briefly. She is in the quiet room, her phone in my back pocket. He has dialed 33 times. He's not dialing now. I walk through the computer lab, trying to breathe, feeling the glances of other students, tapping at keyboards. Nothing. Silence. If silence is nothing, how do we measure it? The mind, for one, fills silence with all the sounds that might break it. Missed call from assistant principal. Office manager finds me, whispers over the computer lab din, he's okay. They are at the park talking. And today ends with exhaustion, promises to speak tomorrow. Sounds, breaths, air, air, air. I'm still lucky enough to share here with her, with him.
Nice. Wow. Thank you. Logan Phillips here. Merlin?
Yeah. Okay.
Let's hear something from Merlin Hepworth.
Here's a poem for my dad. When I was a boy, I wanted to have green eyes. Aqua tangled amber blue water green eyes. Now I didn't want green eyes because I had developed some type of shame about having brown ones. No. My Chicana mother kept it a buck and let us know that brown is indeed beautiful. I wanted green eyes. Because my favorite color was green. Because I grew up on rivers that spilled as open and as free as my limbs under the brim of a sun riding on top of my father's shoulders. Mesmerized by mountains and valleys, I realize I wanted green eyes because my father's eyes are green. His hands and arms, twice the size of mine. I would watch him as he chopped wood, as he tied my shoes, as he handed me a basketball, as he climbed into the truck with other men, giants, who told me one day I would be like them. And just last June on the river, I felt my father's age tremble in my hand as I helped him up a hillside. We drank cold water from the same cup, the love in his gaze, a sight I won't soon forget. I left home at 18, and just last week my father spoke to me about that day, how he was loading groceries into the car, how unexpectedly green his eyes wept without restraint over the absence of his only living son. I've seen my pops battle depression, pick up a cigarette and put it down just to pick it up again before finally kicking it. I've listened to his hands clap on keyboards through the night. I've witnessed him love and honor my mother as his wife. I've heard him apologize over and over again for not making more money, to which I've responded by saying that you can't put a price on the privilege of having a good father by your side. Not everything about my father is good, but there is merit in his stride, and he's been hell-bent and heaven-sent on providing all he can to the lives of his children. And these days, I don't even want green eyes. I like mine just fine. A perfect combination of my mother and father combined. Besides, my father's eyes are not really green. There's too much miracle rippling inside of them to be labeled just one thing. I've seen them gray and slate over my grandfather's grave. I've seen them hazy, hazel, magenta blaze, handing me a basketball, tying my shoes. I've seen them misty river jade, water blue. There are lifetimes and legacies behind their shine, and I'm compelled to believe that the source of that light will always reside here.
That's beautiful.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is beautiful. Thank you, Merlin Hepworth. Thank you, Logan Phillips.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ellie Scott.
Thank you for having us.
Ellie's a writer, too.
Oh, let's get her to read sometime.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Next time we'll do it.
In the distant future.
Next time we'll do it.
Why does it got to be distant?